key to the city. And the popular kids would be cheering, and my hair would unfrizz, and my pearly whites would suddenly and miraculously be preacher man straight. I'm incredibly realistic. I thankfully wasn't privy quite yet to the fact that most people think writers are average at best. And usually it's the critics, not the enamored, who give the most feedback. But I didn't know this at the time, so my fantasy fix-it plan for rejection was well underway. I was surely going to wow those newspaper folks to the point where they'd be convinced their next star columnist was a third grader from Mrs. Hartung's class. Before I knew it, the field trip day arrived. We got off the sticky, hot school bus and lined up in front of the tall building. I remember the regal white columns, the scripty font on the sign, and the way Mrs. Hartung hushed us before opening the front doors. It might as well have been the gates of heaven. I breathed deeply and prepared to step into a whole new future as the most popular kid in school. Hello, Tallahassee Democrat! Then suddenly, a demon in the form of a wasp hand-picked me out of all the crowd to attack. I reeled back as pain shot in all directions on my arm. I screamed, tears trickled down my red cheeks, and my arm swelled up Popeye-style. I never even made it past the lobby. My mom came to get me, and the next day at school, I was the brunt of more jokes than ever. Even months later, when I won the speech contest at school, I can remember being terrified of standing up at the outside assembly to deliver my winning speech. I had no notions of quick fixes or parades or keys to the city suddenly making me popular. I was simply terrified that another wasp would attack me, putting all my fears and tears on display again. By then I'd learned a painful lesson I'd continued to learn over and over again through the different seasons of my life. The spotlight never fixes our insecurities. It only magnifies what we thought popularity would cover up. Neither does a great relationship. I have an amazing marriage, most of the time. But there have been seasons when I just about destroyed our relationship because I was so terrified of him one day leaving me. I imagined affairs that never happened and a whole host of other crazy scenarios that simply weren't true. It was just like winning that contest but not enjoying it because I was convinced another wasp was coming in any minute. The list of things I've thought would fix me through the years goes well beyond popularity and relationships. I imagine you could keep adding things you've attempted here as well. Life just doesn't tie up neatly. There are more wasps and more stings. These things are just part of life. But Jesus doesn't refuse to reach out to us in the middle of hurts and heartbreaks and mess-ups. Our Lord's divinity has never been hesitant to step into the mess of humanity. He is the great answer to our every desire, and he will not let our need for divine deep love, meant to be fulfilled by him alone, be cheaply met by lesser things. He may very well give us good gifts. He may entrust with us relationships and success and blessings of all kinds. After all, he loves to give good gifts to those he loves, but he will not honor the chase of these things. If we think lesser things can truly satisfy, we'll forever chase the wind. It's an exhausting search. We'll forever be out of breath in hot pursuit of becoming someone we perceive we need to be. One day I'll become someone's wife. One day I'll become someone significant. One day I'll live there or drive that or be able to buy things without looking at the price tags. One day I'll hit this benchmark of success or brilliance or status. We say it with such confidence and then chase everything and everyone that can help make this happen. And in the process, we run farther and farther away from the only giver of good gifts, the one who wants to live a love story with us. Not as the magic genie we occasionally run to for a little dose of divine help, but the one who stills us, quiets us, wipes away our exhaustion and whispers, "It's not about you becoming anything. Your soul was made to simply be with me. And the more you are with me, the more you will stop fearing what the world might take from you. With me, you are free to be you, the real you, the you honesty called to at the very beginning of this journey, the you whose core is in alignment with my truth, the you who doesn't fear imperfections or rejections, because grace has covered those in the loveliest of ways. Overcoming rejection can never be dependent on overcoming a perceived obstacle. I want that, and if I get it, life will be great. No. Oh God, cripple the part of our hearts that dares misguide us with this thinking. The deepest part of me runs to find honesty. And when I find honesty, I realize it was Jesus calling to me all along. I get it now. I finally get it. I'm vulnerable, but I'm deeply assured. And with an embrace that rivals any ever given, I exclaim, rejection never has the final say. Rejection may be a delay or distraction or even a devastation for a season, but it's never a final destination. I'm destined for a love that can't ever be diminished, tarnished, shaken, or taken. With you, Jesus, I'm forever safe. I'm forever accepted. I'm forever held, completely loved, and always invited in. Bonus chapter. What's it like to do life with me? Hi, friend. I am so honored to have walked through this book with you. As I wrote this message, I cried through some parts and rolled my eyes laughing in other parts, but most of all, I thought of you with every word. Though we may never have met in person, God gave me a profound sense of compassion for you as he poured this message through my heart and into every typed word. I deeply understand the hurt that haunts the heart of the one rejected. I pray you could feel my love for you on every page. I wrote this message because I needed it most of all. But I pray my thoughts and revelations from Jesus have comforted you and helped you in wonderfully freeing ways. Now that we've been honest and courageous with looking at rejection from all angles, there's one last part I want us to consider. In the midst of rejection, it's so hard to think that we might be doing something to add to the situation. It's usually much easier to identify where others have gone wrong and hurt us. But now that we've made progress together and uninvited, this is a safe place to really analyze ourselves by asking the question, what's it like to do life with me? So I wrote a bonus chapter to help us process through this. Honestly, I might have written this chapter just for me, because y'all, for real, I've got blind spots, and the people who live in close proximity to me are probably more aware of them than I am. So if you're feeling brave, let's intentionally open our hearts. Ask the Lord to show us what he wants to speak to us, and then turn the page together. Much love, Lisa. It's a fascinating question. What's it really like to do life with me? I want the answer to be amazing, wonderful, the best. And in some moments, maybe that's true. But each time I'm uninvited, it's a good time to take a step back and reevaluate some things. And not just about the other person. I think most of us have the propensity to believe it was the other person's issues that caused her to reject us. And maybe that's true. But I think a more productive use of time is to reevaluate some things about us. I've tripped through enough relationship potholes to know I bring my own set of imperfections and complications. I could just explain away the hard realities of barriers and breakdowns with others, or I could attempt to look at some possible patterns within myself and pay attention. And by paying attention, I mean listen, really listen. There is a story my past needs to tell my present. And honestly, there are probably a few things others have tried to tell me that I couldn't or wouldn't hear. I gave this some serious thought when I was inspired by a new friend who had physical hearing challenges. I was at a church conference, sitting backstage, feeling the usual pre-message jitters, when the event coordinator asked if I would wear an oblong plastic device hooked to my shirt. Thinking this was a modern version of a lapel microphone, I explained that I was just using a handheld mic, so there was no need for a clip-on. An anxious look crossed her face. She went on to explain that there was a woman in the audience who asked if I would wear this as a special favor, so she could better hear my message. I wanted to do this for the audience member, no question, but not really understanding the situation, I grew concerned. I didn't want my blouse to droop or pull in places that would make me hyperconscious, and there didn't seem to be any inconspicuous way to wear the new device. Trust me, I've been in many an embarrassing situation while standing on stage, and I try to avoid adding any more stories like these to my life. Thinking of other possible solutions, I went to find the sound guy. I asked him if I could clip the device onto the podium or my Bible as long as I stayed close enough for it to still properly work. That's when I got more explanation. For 45 years, the lady in the audience had never been able to hear a sermon being preached. She'd actually never even heard a prayer being prayed. Her doctor had been working on this special device that would send the specially magnified sound of my voice directly into her hearing aids, allowing her to listen as never before. Me wearing this clip wasn't just a special favor. This was an epic event in the life of this woman. Now that I'd heard the whole story, I felt like such a heel for worrying about my shirt. I clipped the device directly below my chin and suddenly couldn't have cared less about the shirt droop. I walked on stage and immediately asked my new friend if she could hear me. With blinking eyes and a huge smile, she nodded. Several times during my message, she had tears streaming down her face. So did her friend with her. By the time I concluded with the prayer, I knew this was an incredible victory for her lifelong struggle. It's amazing what a gift it is to be able to hear. I guarantee you, of all the hundreds of people in the audience that day, there was no one listening with more intentionality than my friend with the device. She knew she needed help to hear. The device filled a gap she couldn't fill on her own. Once she made use of it, she was able to listen, really listen. I wish there was a device I could wear to help me become a better listener. Not a better listener because I have trouble hearing. No, I'm talking about really listening to make me more self-aware of the things I referred to earlier that I'm sure others wish I would hear. To listen or to fail to listen is my choice. Just like when the prophet Ezekiel was being called by God, he was warned that the exiles were unyielding, hardened, and rebellious. Go now to your people in exile and speak to them. Say to them, "This is what the sovereign Lord says, whether they listen or fail to listen." Ezekiel 3:11. These people weren't willing to listen to the prophet because ultimately they weren't willing to listen to God. Ouch. I never want this to be said about me, but I must admit there are times I don't hear what others are trying to say. This isn't a fun chapter to write. After all, in the context of this book about healing from rejection, I don't want to have to look internally. It feels a little better to blame others for making me feel left out and lonely. It's hard to say, I may be part of the issue here. But if I want things to get better for me, I need to take a hard look at me. The most frustrated people are those who feel their lives can only improve when others put forth the necessary effort to make things better. That's problematic since we can't control others. A more productive view of change is to look at ways we need to change. Yes, others may need to make tweaks too. For now, however, let's take some steps forward to examine ourselves and listen to what this may reveal. Back to my original question. What is it really like to do life with me? There's a wonderful set of verses in Proverbs 4:20-27. I like looking at the book of Proverbs as a way to examine my current thinking against the backdrop of God's true wisdom. I guess you could say it serves as a spiritual listening device to aid me in being able to hear truth. Proverbs provides both a goal and root. The goal is successful living, and the root is the way of wisdom. If my goal is to pursue more successful relationships, this wisdom from Proverbs is a great route to take. Proverbs 4:20-22 is a call to wisdom. "My son, pay attention to what I say. Turn your ear to my words. Do not let them out of your sight. Keep them within your heart. For they are life to those who find them, and health to one's whole body. Verses 23 through 27 are like a checklist of sorts. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk far from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. Give careful thought to the paths for your feet, and be steadfast in all your ways. Do not turn to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil. Let's unpack this checklist. Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. This deals with my attitude. Have you ever interacted with a know-it-all? Know-it-alls see themselves as a resident expert on almost every topic and are very bold with their opinions. As a matter of fact, they don't see the thoughts they express as opinions at all. They feel all they share are absolute facts and aren't shy about shooting down contradictory ideas. Does someone's face pop into your mind as you read that description? Me too. Actually, a couple people fall into that description for me. Now, mentally shift your criticism of them to a place of grace for a bit, and let your own picture be the one you see matched with this description. I know, this doesn't perfectly describe you. But what piece of it does? Usually, at least one relationship we have brings out little bits of the know-it-all in us. Seek to see it, even if it's just a hint of it, and determine to try something the next time it starts happening. Guard your heart from the many slippery slopes. One of the most damaging elements in relationships is pride. That need to be the expert, the right one, the most knowledgeable, it pulls us down into a pit of pride we probably would never label as such. And because pride is so hard to see, here's a hint of how to know it's there. The less we feel we need to address pride in our lives, the more it has already blinded us. Gracious, that's a painful sentence for me to type, because it forces me to examine something I quite simply don't want to see or acknowledge. But here are some verses that help me pray through this as I ask God to pry open my spiritual eyes and ears. His pride led to his downfall. He was unfaithful to the Lord, his God. 2 Chronicles 26:16. In his pride, the wicked man does not seek him. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God. Psalm 10:4. For the sins of their mouths, for the words of their lips, let them be caught in their pride. Psalm 59:12. When pride comes, there comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. Proverbs 11:2. Where there is strife, there is pride, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. Proverbs 13:10. Pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. Proverbs 16:18. We must guard our hearts against pride. Otherwise, pride will taint everything else we do, say, and think. There are certainly other things we need to guard our hearts from, but pride is so blinding, we'll never even see them or be receptive to hearing them if we don't address this first. Then we can see and hear the other things with humility. Keep your mouth free from perversity. Keep corrupt talk far from your lips. This deals with my propensity toward or away from affirmation. Do our words build up or tear down? Imagine there is a bridge over a vast canyon. You're on one side, and a person you care about is on the other side. Every time you dishonor that person with your words, you remove a plank from the bridge. At first, this can seem like no big deal. You can navigate around the gaps by stepping over them. But eventually, the gaps become gaping holes, causing the journey to the other person to be a treacherous one. Crossing over starts to feel more and more impossible. That's a daunting picture, right? If I want to keep my connecting bridge strong, there are things I need to assess about the way I'm using my words. Things like questioning actions without having all the facts. assuming the worst about intentions instead of believing the best. Having a critical tone when discussing possibilities for someone's future. Needing to say, "I told you so," when someone takes a wrong turn. Competing with another person's accomplishments instead of celebrating them. Processing my thoughts about someone with others before talking directly to that person. Seeing someone's issues with bold spotlight clarity while thinking mine are but mere shadows in comparison. Each of these things removes the planks one by one from our connecting bridge. The holes can be repaired, but it will take time and great intentionality to build back with affirmation what negativity has eroded. Here are some affirming questions to start with. Would you help me understand how best to encourage you? When we don't agree, what's the best way to approach a compromise? What is something you wish I wouldn't do when we discuss issues? Is there an area of your life I can better support? What is something in your life you wish we could celebrate together? How can we make our relationship more of a priority in this season? Is there a mutual confidant, friend, or counselor who is mature enough to help us think through and strategize ways to improve our relationship? This is just the beginning of a positive list. Keep adding to it as you continue to think through this. These affirming planks will go a long way in putting your words to good use. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. This challenges my altitude. A friend of mine recently told me she put herself through a 360 evaluation. I thought that sounded interesting, so I asked her to explain. Basically, to increase her ability to see things from another person's vantage point, she had to circle the issue looking for her own blind spots. As a follower of Jesus, we are followers of wisdom. Fixing our gaze directly before us and looking straight ahead helps us to focus on wisdom and not get deceived by our own blindness and assumptions. I get distracted from wisdom and attracted to foolishness when I don't seek to understand what other people really want. Wisdom seeks to see someone else's vantage point, even if I don't agree with that person's perspective. But only from their perspectives can you strategize about how to meet the other people on common ground. Foolishness refuses to acknowledge there's any other way to look at something but mine. Eventually, others will build barriers to shut this kind of exhausting foolishness out of their lives. My husband and I really had to work on this in our relationship. I'm a get it done and figure out the small details later kind of girl. He's a write out every step because no detail is too small to become a big problem kind of guy. Recently, we were helping one of our adult kids think through the purchase of her first little starter home. My daughter and I crunched all the numbers to get what would be a reasonable monthly mortgage payment, and then we estimated all the other related monthly bills and were good to go. We found a great deal on a house that fit within our established budget and felt that we'd attended to all the necessary details. I thought Art would be thrilled with all our processing when we verbally presented everything to him looking for his support. He wanted everything written out on paper from start to finish. I could have pushed back, confident we'd done what we needed to do, and then just left him out of the rest of the process. But as I forced myself to look at things from his vantage point, I saw the wisdom in taking the time to write everything out in much more detail than our simple version of running the numbers. We didn't get as detailed as he would have, but we met on the common ground of getting much more on paper than before. Rising above my own vantage point to circle around and see his was a better altitude from which to see the bigger picture. Had I dug in my heels and refused to meet Art in the common ground, we would have missed some expenses that eventually could have caused our daughter some financial setbacks. In the end, we adjusted her remodel budget and were able to set her up for success. Give careful thought to the paths for your feet and be steadfast in all your ways. Do not turn to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil. This is about my actions. Okay, last evaluation. Now that we've been diligent with our attitude, affirmation, and altitude, we must analyze our actions, past and present. Sometimes when I veered from wisdom, I have to go back to reevaluate past actions in order to go forward in restoring present relationships. To do this, we must backtrack, back up, and back down. Backtrack. Admit we've been wrong. If we're brave enough to start the restoration process by owning one issue where we were wrong, it will start to soften other hard places. Back up. Ask for forgiveness. This will give the other person a safe place to stand while considering the next step. Back down. Intentionally show that person the action for which we ask for forgiveness is an area where we are making strides of improvement and breaking unhealthy patterns. I'm very thankful God's word helps me see things I need to pay attention to. Nothing will give you emotional laryngitis like living in close proximity to someone who refuses to listen. Having emotions but no voice chokes the life out of relationships. How tragic for the one silenced. But also, how tragic for the silencer who throws so much richness of relationship away. Whew, we've covered a lot in this bonus section. I don't picture these pages to be a one-read section. I know I'll revisit all we've just processed again and again as I make progress in various relationships. Learning to listen requires strategies to improve our hearing. Just as my friend's life changed when she was given a hearing device, I pray this section gives you a relationship revitalization. And the next time you ask the question, what's it really like to do life with me? I pray the answer makes you and those you love smile.
You've been listening to the audio production of Uninvited, Living Loved, When You Feel Less Than, Left Out, and Lonely. Text copyright 2016 by Lisa Turkhurst. Production copyright 2016 by Thomas Nelson. No portion of this recording may be reproduced without the prior written consent of the publisher. For more information on other fine books and audio products from Thomas Nelson, please visit your favorite retailer or visit us online at thomasnelson.com. Uninvited, Living Loved, When You Feel Less Than, Left Out and Lonely was recorded at Audio Productions in Nashville, Tennessee.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.